The following shiur has been presented by Rav Shmuel ben Yamin Honigwax, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
For Hetrei Iska, loans and collections, please call the center at 1-888-485-VAAD or visit thehalachacenter.org.
I'm starting a three-shiur series on the topic of Kol Eisal Das Rishayna Hu Oisa. This is relevant to Daf Mem Aleph, and it's a pretty complicated story and a pretty complicated psak of a Din Torah that is heavily related to the concept that we find in Daf Mem Aleph of Kol Eisal Das Rishayna Hu Oisa. So I'm going to start with this shiur, Mirtz Hashem, and continue through the next two shiurim in discussion of the Din Torah and the various angles that came in, some of which have a connection and some of which don't. The following story took place. An individual lent another individual money. Let's call him Reuven and Shimon. Reuven is the lender, Shimon is the borrower. So Reuven lent Shimon money, and he structured it not as a loan, but as a heter iska for a high amount of interest. It was a hard money loan, 12% interest. There was a middleman who negotiated this loan, and the assumption at the time of the loan, according to the borrower, was, or the recipient, we call them when we're dealing with the heter iska, was that the loan is, I guess, more of a short-term loan, and not very short-term, like around a year or so, and that the recipient would then be able to refinance the building that they had been buying or building, I don't remember exactly, and at that point they would pay back the heter iska and be able to pay a far lower interest rate. In the meantime, the financial crash took place. Mortgages were very hard to come by, and it turned out that it would be very difficult for the recipient to now be able to receive a loan from a bank on the building. So the recipient there were a few days late on a payment. There was a phone conversation. I don't remember who called who. But what happened was that there was a phone conversation where the recipient told the investor, it was the middleman, I don't know what to do. It's very hard for me. I can't really go on like this, paying this kind of interest. So the middleman hangs up. A few hours later, he called back. He said, so what should we do? So what are you proposing? So the recipient, the borrower, so-called borrower, proposed, okay, you know, I don't want to pay any more interest. I'm already paying interest for a year and a half, 12%. I don't want to pay any more interest. I want to just pay back the principal. And the arrangement of this loan had been that for a few years there would be interest-only payments, and then at the end of the term, all the principal would be paid off. And what the recipient was proposing was that they would pay the principal back at an accelerated rate, so that a large part of the principal will be returned before the due date for the principal, but they would be putter from paying ribbis. And they were paying a larger amount than they would have been paying had they been paying just the interest on the loan. In other words, the interest payments would have come out to less than what the principal payments were going to be according to the new payment plan. So this continued for a number of years. The entire loan was paid down, and now the recipient receives a hazmana from Beis Din. They come to Beis Din. What's going on? I thought we had a deal. So the investor says, yeah, you're right, we had a deal, but I didn't have a choice. What was I supposed to do? You were threatening me that if I didn't accept this deal, that you would stop paying me. And therefore, I had no choice but to, quote-unquote, agree to the deal that you were proposing. But I never really intended to agree to this deal because this deal is certainly not in my best interest. I would prefer to take this money that you're paying me as interest payments rather than principal. And as proof, I told two witnesses at the time what was going on. And the two witnesses wrote what's known as a shtar moidah. The moidah means that if one person is trying to force another person to do, to sell him something or to do any kind of transaction, financial transaction, against the person's will, and he's threatening him with something with severe consequences, then the person who's being threatened has the option of approaching two Eidim and telling them what's going on, showing them what the onus is, showing them how he's being forced, and the two Eidim will either write a shtar moidah or come into Bezdin and testify about what was going on, and Bezdin will then be able to nullify the transaction that took place under duress. There are transactions which, despite the fact that they're under duress, would nevertheless be upheld in Bezdin. But the halacha is that if a moidah was executed, if the person who was going through with the transaction told witnesses and showed witnesses that he was under duress, and he was moiser moidah, then that would be enough to be mevatel that transaction, to nullify the transaction, despite the fact that the transaction otherwise would have been upheld, despite the fact that it was under duress. So this was the argument of the toivea, the investor, or the sarsur, the middleman for the investor, who was claiming that the deal that he negotiated was not really being negotiated in good faith. He was only doing it in order to get his money, and once he got his money, now he's going to go to Bezdin and try to get the rest of the money. This was the claim that he made in Bezdin. And another claim was as follows. The document that the investor gave the recipient saying that he was moichel, that he forgave the interest payments and it was going to be principal only payments, read approximately as follows. The way the document read was that if the recipient indeed pays the principal payment at this accelerated rate, and it specified exactly what amount of money was to be paid, then the investor will forgive the interest that was agreed upon. Now, we know in halacha that there is a specific wording that has to be used in order to execute transactions. If a person says, I will sell you my field, and he does a maisa kinyan, he does an act which would generally be enough to execute that transaction. He does a kinyan sudr, a kinyan chazak, whatever it is. But the verbiage that's used is that I will sell you my field. In that case, since the verbiage is not the proper verbiage to denote a sale which is actually taking place at this time, but rather it denotes a sale at a future time, then we don't view it as a transaction where the person is selling the field to the other person, but rather it's viewed as the person trying to obligate himself to sell the field. And he didn't say, I am obligated to sell the field. He said, I will sell the field. That's called a kinyan etting. It's a kinyan where a person says, I will give you something. That is not considered a valid verbiage to use to execute a kinyan, and therefore the kinyan is meaningless. So, in this case, where the person used the expression, I will forgive, if you do so-and-so, I will forgive, that would very possibly be considered an improper verbiage to use to denote a kinyan, and therefore, the kinyan, the mechila, the fact that you forgave the interest payments, would possibly be null and void. So, again, to recap, there were two main arguments against the nitva, the defendant. One argument was that the toivea, the plaintiff, was claiming that the entire mechila, the fact that he forgave the interest payments, was made under duress. And additionally, he was moiser moidah, he executed the shtar moidah, which would nullify any action which was taken under duress. That was argument number one. Argument number two, which was not as stressed as much, but it was an undertone, was that the actual language used was not a valid language to use when one is trying to actually execute this kind of execution, and therefore the Kenyan wouldn't be chal anyways. It wouldn't take place anyways because the language was not correct. So let's get started with the first argument. The first argument is the argument of Moidah and Oynes. So the halacha is that when a person is giving a matana, let's say I take my gun, I hold it to somebody's head, and I tell him, you have to sign this piece of land over to me for nothing. No consideration at all. I'm not giving you a penny for it. So then the halacha is that if the guy can prove that I forced him, the gift is null and void. Even if the guy can't prove that I forced him, if the person was meiser or meida, the gift is also null and void. Why? Because there's a question what the svara for this is, but either the understanding is because a person wouldn't, is not being, there's no reason for a person to try to give a matana and then take it back, to gift something to somebody and then to try to get it back. The fact that he was meiser meida shows us that there was some kind of einus over here, that it was done under duress. So therefore, that's proof that it was done under duress, as opposed to a case of a sale where the person can theoretically have tried to get a free loan for a short while, and then when he was finished using the money, he would try to turn around and get his piece of land back, and we would say that we don't have proof that there was actually duress used. So therefore, and there's other explanations also. Whatever the point is, the idea is that when a person is gifting something to somebody, it's a lot easier to nullify that gift than it is to nullify a sale. When it comes to a sale, you have to have a confluence of two facts. First of all, the person has to have been under duress, and second of all, he has to be meiser meida. But one without the other won't work. So the first question that we have to address is, in our case, is this considered a sale, or is this considered a gift? So, on this, the Beis Din ruled that this would be considered a sale rather than a gift. Why? Even though technically, an argument can be made that it's a regular gift. Why? Because he's just being moichel, he's forgiving an obligation that the recipient has. The recipient would have been obligated to pay a certain amount of interest, and he's just being moichel that interest. So that could be viewed, because of that, as a gift. He's just giving something for free. He's not getting anything in return. On the other hand, the argument could be made that no, it's a sale, because in our case, the principal is being paid back at an accelerated rate, and the investor is getting more money back than he would have gotten otherwise. So he's getting to use his money before he would have otherwise been able to use the money. So he's getting a very, very valuable item, which is the fact that he gets his principal returned to him. He gets bigger payments every month earlier than he would have gotten them. That is a benefit that he's receiving. So therefore, the argument can be made, and this is what the Beis Din accepted, that this would be considered a mecher, would be considered a sale, it's a transaction where there's consideration being offered, and therefore the halacha would be that that's considered a sale, and you would have to prove the oinus. So we spoke about the Dentaira, about the Moidah on the ribbis of the Heter Iska, and we left off with the fact that the Beis Din was machria that the deal was considered a deal of a sale. In other words, there was consideration being given in the form of the fact that the investor would receive his principal back at an accelerated rate and would receive more money per month than he would have been receiving had he only been receiving the interest payments. And therefore, since it was considered a sale, we would need a combination of facts in order to invalidate the sale. We would need to have a moidah, which we have, and we would also have to know that there was an oinus. Now, in this case, if we would have clear proof that the recipient threatened the investor that they would not pay despite the fact that they had money to pay, that would be considered valid proof of an oinus. However, the situation was not like that. The recipient never threatened the investor that they wouldn't pay. They never said that. They just said, I don't know what I'm going to do. And additionally, the investor had never been able to prove that the recipient had money at the time. Perhaps the recipient didn't even have money. Additionally, when it comes to a heter iska, it's possible, according to some opinions, that the recipient can back out and stop working, because the whole concept of a heter iska is based on the fact that the recipient is investing the money and earning money for the investor. It's, according to some opinions in Achronim, the recipient will be able to say, I don't want to work anymore. So when the recipient says, I don't know what to do, that could be interpreted as it's not worth it for me to work. If I have to take so much of my earnings and hand it over to you in the form of interest payments, it's not worth it for me at that point to continue operating my business. If I'm not going to operate my business, then obviously there's not going to be any money for you because I haven't been investing your money. Additionally, if I don't operate my business, then I certainly won't have money, and then there won't be any money for you. So therefore, there's a lot of ways to understand what the recipient was saying, and we're not forced to interpret what the recipient was saying in the manner of saying that they were threatening that even though they have money, they refuse to pay. They're going to hold the investor over a barrel and try to squeeze them and force them to forgive the interest. So we're very able to interpret it in a way which is fair, and therefore we can't say that the investor has proven to us that this deal was made under duress. And therefore, the Moidah on its own would seemingly not work. Now, the second issue that we have to deal with is, like we mentioned, whether the language used was sufficient. Now, this question didn't really end up being that relevant, because in a second session, it emerged that besides for the written language, which may not have been sufficient, there was a verbal agreement which was in which the proper language was used, and therefore, when we're dealing with mechila, you don't have to have. When we're dealing with forgiving something, we don't have to have an actual kinyan. We don't have to have a document. We don't have to have a contract. It's enough to use to say with your mouth, "I'm mechila you." And therefore, since verbally there was a valid expression of mechila that was used, the Bezdin concluded that the second issue was not really relevant. However, during the time which transpired between the first session and the second session, much Torah was nischadish about this inyan, about this topic, and I want to share that with the Olam that's listening to this shir. Basically, the first argument used was as follows. We have to really understand, the investor in our case is being moichel ribis of a heter isker. They're being moichel interest payments. Now, we all know that a Jew is not allowed to charge interest to another Jew. So we have to really understand what does the investor mean when he says, I'm being moichel, I'm forgiving the interest payments. I spoke about this actually in another shir, so I'll be makatzer a little bit, but I'm going to recap it, because I doubt that anybody really remembers. So basically, the idea is as follows. There's a number of ways that we can understand this. Basically, the way heter iska works is as follows. When a person accepts money as a heter iska investment, there's different ways to structure it, but the basic structure is as follows. The money is being taken as an investment. The recipient is going to invest it on behalf of the investing partner. The principal is guaranteed because the recipient has to prove that there was a loss, and he's incapable of bringing proper proof. So that's the principle. We're not really going to be discussing that much, so we're just going to gloss over that a little bit. And then when it comes to the interest payments, how do you guarantee that you're going to be earning $10,000 a year? How can you do that? Maybe you won't earn that money. So the answer is, you're right, maybe I won't earn the money. If the investment doesn't produce that kind of return, you're right, I don't really have to give you that money. Nevertheless, the halacha is, there's something called a shvuas ha-shutfim. When two people go into an agreement where one party knows how much money has been earned on the money, the other party has no idea, the Chacham instituted that the recipient has to swear regarding how much money he actually earned, how much return the investment produced. So he has to swear in Bezdin. Now, swearing in Bezdin is a very serious thing. People generally don't like to swear in Bezdin. So the investor and the recipient go into the following agreement. They say, you know what? We know that the investor is not going to know what's going on. He doesn't know how much money was earned. And we know that the recipient has to make a shvuah. He has to swear in Bezdin regarding how much money was earned. And we know that the recipient doesn't want to make that choice. So at the outset, we'll make a settlement. We'll say that even though you might be earning 100% on the money, you might be earning 0% on the money, you might even be losing money, nevertheless, we're going to settle on, let's say, 12%. If you give me a 12% return on my money every year, I'm not going to be chayshed you anymore. I'm not going to suspect you that you're withholding additional profit from me. And I'm going to be mechal the shvua. I'm going to forgive you, and I'm going to say you don't have to make the shvua. That is the basic structure of a heter iska. Now, in our case, the investor told the recipient, if you pay me back the principal at a certain rate, then I'm going to forgive the interest. So like we said, there is no real interest payment. So there's a few ways to understand what he's saying. One way to understand what he's saying is that even though you are earning profit on this money, there is a very substantial return on the money, perhaps, let's say, 50% return, I'm going to grant you all that profit. In other words, I'm going to give you that. It's not a mechila. It's not a I'm not forgiving you anything because it's not a chiv. It's not a monetary obligation that you have. It's an actual earnings that I have. The investor actually earned money. It's his money. It's not money that he lent to the recipient. He actually earned money on his money. So he's going to take that money and grant it and gift it to the recipient. That's one way to interpret what he's saying. Another way to interpret what he's saying is that since the interest payment is based on the chiyuv shvua, and the only rationale that we have, the only right that the investor has to demand this interest payment is because he has a threat hanging over the recipient that if you don't give me this money, I'm going to make you swear in bezin, and the recipient doesn't want to swear in bezin. So we can interpret what he's saying when he says he's going to forgive the interest. That can be understood as meaning that he's going to forgive the obligation to swear. He's going to say, you don't have to swear. It's a mechila on the shvur. According to these two ways of interpreting it, obviously, but it would seem that the problem that we raised, which is that it's a kinyan etein, the right language was not used, that would be a serious problem. If we're dealing with the investor granting money to the recipient, giving him a gift, certainly you have to use the proper expression. Even if he would have said, it is forgiven, it might not work because it's not a chayv, it's not an obligation, a monetary obligation that the recipient has, but rather we have to have an actual transfer of funds from the investor to the recipient. They happen to be under the recipient's control, but nevertheless, the halacha would view it as a matana, as a gift. And therefore, you may even have to have a stronger lashon than a lashon of mechila. So it's even more serious of an issue than we explained originally. Even if it's a mechila of the chiyuv shvua, even if he's forgiving the obligation to swear, that is also a tangible thing, so sort of tangible, that he's actually being mechila at this time, and therefore, that would also need... according to the simple understanding, that would need to have the proper language to be used in order to execute that kind of forgiveness. So according to these two understandings, the investor has a very strong point that the proper language was not used. However, there's a third way to understand what's going on. Like we said, the chiyuv of interest, the interest obligation is based on a chiyuv shvur, the fact that you have to swear. And it's a settlement for that chiyuv shvur. Fine. But we don't actually have to go ahead and be meichel that chiyuv shvur. Why? Because you already were meichel the chiyuv shvur. When the investor made this settlement with the recipient, what they were basically saying was, if you pay me 12%, I'm already being meichel you the chiyuv shvur. And he used the proper language for that, because that is what the heter iska is based on. The heter iska uses language which is effective in taking off of the chiyuv shvur in the case that the recipient pays that settlement amount. So we can understand it as meaning that the investor is already meichel the chiyuv shvur at the time of the investment, and he makes a tanai. He says, if you pay me a certain amount of money every month or every year, whatever it is, then I will be meichel the chiyuv shvur at this time. Then right now I'm being meichel the chiyuv shvur. I'm being meichel the chiyuv shvur if you pay me that money. So it's a caveat in the actual mechila. In other words, he actually did the mechila at the time of the investment, and then he made a tanai, he made a stipulation, he said, I'm only mechila if you do a certain thing for me, which is that you pay me that agreed upon interest amount. Now we can understand the way, what the investor meant in a third way. not that you're being meichel the actual profits that are earned, and not that you're being meichel the chiyuv shvuah, but you're being meichel the kiyum hatnai. You're being meichel, you're saying that I forgive the stipulation. I was already meichel the chiyuv shvuah and I made a stipulation. Now I'm telling you, you don't have to keep that stipulation. Now when it comes to mechila of a tanai, we find in the Gemara that there's such a thing as being meichel of tanai. And there's a machlokes rishonim, there's an argument between two rishonim, the Rosh and the Ran, how to understand what it means when you're meichel of tanai. How are you meichel of tanai? Tanai is not a chiyuv mamon. Tanai, and especially the Gemara says that you can be meichel of tanai when it comes to being mekadesh isha, mekadesh isha al tanai. I marry a woman and I make a certain stipulation, and then I can go ahead and be meichel, forgive that stipulation. What does that mean? How do I take off that stipulation? If she wasn't married because the stipulation was not niskayim, how could my words, where I'm meichel the stipulation, or I'm meichel at night, how can that create a marriage out of the thin air? So the Rosh says that it works with the concept of asi dibur mavatal dibur. Since a stipulation is created by words, the person uses his words to create the stipulation. So asi dibur mavatal dibur, the dibur where he's moichel the tanai, goes ahead and cancels out the dibur which created the tanai. Since the only way that the tanai was not created with an action, it was created with words, that can be cancelled out with words. That's what the Rosh says. According to that, it's possible that you would need to have a valid verbiage used to be moichel the tanai. However, according to the Ran says a different shot. The Ran says that every time a person makes a tanai, when you make a stipulation in the first place, it's self-understood that the reason why you're making the stipulation is because you care about that item. If I stipulate that you have to do a certain thing for me, the reason why I'm stipulating that is because I want that thing to happen. And it's self-understood. There's an umdana at the time of the mecher, at the time of the tanai, there's an umdana. Everybody understands that the reason why you're making the tanai is because you want a certain outcome. You want the kima tanai. And it's as though you said that if I don't end up caring about the kima tanai, then that itself should be considered a kima tanai. In other words, there's two ways to be mekayim tanai. Either you actually do what we said you would do, or I don't care about it. That's another way of being mekayim tanai, and that's as though it was articulated at the time of the making of the tanai, that there's two avenues that could be used to fulfill this stipulation. One is that you actually do what you're supposed to do, and another is that you sort of convince me not to care about it. So now, it's possible that since the way it works is not because you're actually accomplishing something, you're not doing anything when you're meichel tonight, you're just showing that you don't really care about it. So therefore, it's possible that the expression of I will forgive is enough. Because even though I will forgive is not enough of a good it's not a good enough language to actually execute something, to actually create forgiveness, but it's enough to show us that you don't care about it. And since the only thing we care about by mechil of kima tanai is that you've proven to us that it doesn't matter to you anymore, so when you say that if you do a certain thing, I will forgive, that at least shows us that you don't really care that much about the kima tanai, and therefore the tanai is, it's as though the tanai was in the sky. So again, since there was already a mechila on the shvuah, since at the time of the investment, the person already was meichel the shvuah, and he just made a tanai, he stipulated, I'm only meichel the shvuah is if you pay me a certain amount of money, once a person shows that he doesn't really care about that interest payment, by saying that if you do something else, I will forgive the interest payment, showing us that I don't care about that interest payment if you do that other thing, therefore, that will be enough to be considered a kiyum hatanai, and the mechila already happened at the time of the investment. That was one avenue that the Beis Din was exploring to see whether or not this language of I will forgive would be sufficient in order to create in order to validate the agreement that was made.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultation, service, educational seminars or media, please call 1-888-485-VAAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Havad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.